Hey there, Star Wars Rebels fans. We are one step closer to the end. I can't believe we're so close. Tonight, we are talking about Season 4, Episodes 12 and 13 here on AfterBuzz TV, Wolves and a Door, and A World Between Worlds. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yay!
You all! Nobody believed me!
I believed you. I knew she wasn't gonna die that way. I just knew it.
Couldn't happen.
No,
that way.
I wasn't gonna let it happen. She's
we're,
here now.
We're all like, again, we knew that it couldn't end that way. There had to be more, and sure enough, our blind faith was rewarded.
For those of you who want to see their faces while we were watching that fight, there's a nice new post on my Instagram because I absolutely took secret selfies of all of us while they weren't paying attention.
Megan had to hold my hand. It was a lot. I was going through all of the emotions. We're not allowed to scream in the building. You know, people are trying to watch and tape shows.
You guys don't understand. We have to internalize everything until we get into this studio.
It's really hard.
And then we just get to yell and scream because we're just a bunch of girls screaming, am I right?
Yes, obviously.
Anyway, guys, hey, Star Wars Rebels fans, welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we're talking about Season 4, Episodes 12 and 13. Let's not waste any time. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Joelle Monique.
Hey, guys, I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at blackgirlnerds.com.
And to her left, Katie Cullen.
Hello, my buddies. You can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxe. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. And to my roundabout left.
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag ABTVRebels on Twitter. Katie's got you guys covered on the live chat. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and just start off the show because I got a feeling that once we get going, we're not going to want to take a break. So I'm just going to go ahead and start it off by saying, if you guys haven't already done so, please go to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you. And it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we've been putting on for the past 4 seasons.
It's coming to an end.
And it's fine.
It's so fast.
One more week. It's okay, guys. Keep it together. All right. And if you guys do leave a comment before next week, you guys can get a shout out in our very last after show, like these fine fantastic folks. Love by Mandalore, who gave 5 stars. It's been a while since I could catch the podcast live on YouTube, but it's been amazing listening to the cast on iTunes. This is my favorite way to connect with Rebels fans after each episode, and I absolutely love it. Keep up the amazing work. And then we got one more. Love this podcast by X Do Not Play X. I'm getting a little verklempt here. This has to be the best podcast, hands down. Love listening to all of you after I watch each episode. Going to miss all of you when the series is done. Really going to miss the talk about Chopper. He's my favorite in the series.
We're going to miss you,
we all love the alley cat.
And man, Murderbot Chopper has just grown fully.
He's
an awesome being.
I think we got a great example of why he should not be trifled. A good reminder of why he should not be trifled with at the end of the second episode. I'm pretty sure he murdered a couple stormtroopers in a way that's almost cartoonishly grotesque.
It was hysterical. It's like, oh, you have a small angry droid in charge of a large multi-bit drill.
That was chopping mall death is what that was
the drill that we're going to use to push through the rock. And I really appreciate that we came full circle with that. Bring the drill. Chopper's like, great. I see my weapon of choice.
I got you. Drill, you're going to regret asking for it, but here we go. That you can definitely tell he's lashing out because a giant wolf grabbed him and dragged him across the planet in its mouth.
He lost all agency.
We were chatting about, it's going to be weird. They have to leave Chopper behind. And then, let's go. Oh my God, this is a dog carrying a cat. This is hysterical.
I think we all yelped with laughter when we saw that because we were the base will be fortified. If Chopper's staying behind, no stormtrooper will come within 100 miles of it. And then just chomp and whoosh off through the weird dimensional TARDIS time warp thing.
It kind of was when they go into the hyperspeed, but not quite, not really.
It was a screensaver and a clip show.
Yeah, we're going to be a little bit looser on the format for these two episodes because they really kind of are very much companion pieces, and I don't necessarily see the need to break it up by episode since we got them both tonight.
Yeah.
I think let's go around the table because I want to know what you guys think in terms of what stood out about these two episodes the most to you, because for me it was definitely those audio cues traveling by Lothwolf, and then when we got through the portal in the temple, all of those audio cues, you can definitely tell that this is the series' way of really encompassing as much of the film Star Wars canon as it possibly can before we finally get to the end point.
The fact that we got a quote from Rey even was just like, okay.
I really appreciate the way this episode bridges not just your original trilogy, not just Clone Wars, not just the future, but literally the way we look at the balance of the Force. I mean, if you're like a real Star Wars head, you know that like a long time ago before the 100 Years of Darkness struck, like there was no Sith and Jedi were essentially partners with people. Like there was an actual balance to the Force. And I mentioned many times on this show that one of my big issues was that we never really get a sense of balance, which is why the trilogy of Mortis from the Clone Wars is my favorite trilogy of all time. It is, guys, if you have not watched it, like you don't need to watch the rest of the Clone Wars to enjoy just those three episodes. And to see those characters reborn here, and then to give them subtext that we don't get from the original trilogy. Like, this show just expanded the entire Star Wars universe in an hour, and it was amazing. And we got Ahsoka back. I was like, this is the greatest episodes of Rebels ever. Like, no competition.
How about you, Katie? Standout moment.
Oh, my or God. Aspect. The moving paintings. Just the animation on all of those. It was incredible. The gold line work, man, that was beautiful.
If there's one thing Disney/Pixar can do really well, it's that combination of 2D animation and 3D animation. When it's done well, it is immensely effective. So you mentioned the Trinity. For those who, like Katie and myself, we've only gotten like pieces of Clone Wars lore and very select episodes that we're watching, because unless you have the exact order to watch Clone Wars in, it's very hard to consistently watch Clone Wars because it's never ordered anywhere correctly for some reason.
And Netflix always just kind of goes, and then gets rid of it on occasion.
Thanks, Netflix. So for people like us who are more familiar with Rebels than we are with Clone Wars, would you mind telling us what you know about this particular trilogy?
Sure. So the Trilogy of Mortis picks up right as our three main heroes. So we have Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and Anakin in a ship. They're escaping danger, and they kind of get sucked into this planet. If you look at the characters today, you know you have the Father, the Son,
and the Holy
daughter.
Spirit.
And
yes.
The Holy Spirit.
I always want to say it, but I try really hard not to.
Let's be real. Her avatar is a bird. She's the Holy Spirit.
It's true. Or Artemis, you know, the goddess of intelligence.
Yeah. I love that.
So the idea essentially is looking at balance. So you have this... I don't want to go into, like, breaking down all of the episodes, so I'm going to give you broad strokes. So
broad strokes are fine. That's all we got time for.
So you can actually place these three characters over Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan. You have father, daughter, son. The idea that Ahsoka is constantly fighting for good, even though, just like Ezra, she's occasionally tempted by the dark side. And they basically kind of predict the future. They're like, look, you can make some decisions here in this realm. Eventually, the son, in an attempt to kill the father, accidentally kills the daughter, and he's heartbroken because that's his sister and he loves her, but he feels like his father is holding him back. Each one of them rules the planet for half the day. They split it. So everything grows and is beautiful in like the morning time when she's up, and then he's coming around and it's all dying and it's decaying and death, but it's balanced. It's perfect.
Closed door.
So when he kills his sister... there is no more balance. So the father tries to get Anakin to stay because he's the chosen one. Mm-hmm. You should stay here because you will be all powerful in this space. which is kind of what was, I think, holding up the temple before. And maybe it's one of, in the same way that Kanan's will was able to affect some things here, maybe his will was keeping the temple up until we were able to find another chosen one. But, like, essentially what makes it cool is that they explained the Force in a way that was kind of abstract. What I like that happened here was they're like, so not only is this just abstract, but this is, like, their original, like, religious deities, almost.
And that's a really, I like that parable, because it's both the light and the dark, and with the morning, noon, and night sort of symbolism there, that also encompasses the passage of time and the balance there as well. And this nexus that we go to is a crossroads of time and space, which I don't think we normally see in Star Wars very often. It's sci-fi, but it's not like, and it's definitely like fantasy sci-fi, but for whatever reason, time travel was, at least as far as I can remember. We opened
a door to the TARDIS.
A little bit, yeah.
We kind of sidestepped into that, and that was a little like, hello, this is a thing that's occurring. It's bigger on the inside, for one. And time travel is now an option.
Yeah. And this is actually interesting because in the Clone Wars episodes of the Mortis trilogy, it's not so much time travel, but it is those voices that you hear. And at the end of the episode, this is huge spoilers. If you guys want to watch the episodes, so give me like 2 minutes. basically, they show Anakin everything he's going to become. So he it's an amazing sequence of having a like enlightened conscious Anakin watch himself turn into Vader. He's like, no, I can never do these things. And they're like, you're gonna.
And he's like, that doesn't sound right.
You could stay here.
That doesn't sound like me at all.
Sounds fake, but okay.
This is fake news.
Oh, like, God.
Sorry, I brought it in too soon.
You brought the dark side in. Why'd you do that?
I opened a door. But he chooses not to stay. There's a big fight. Ahsoka gets turned to the dark side briefly while she's there. It's cool to see dark side Ahsoka. I'm not going to lie. When she's a bitch, it's amazing. But they, the father basically, like, the son dies. Father's like, look, I'm wiping all of your memories. You guys don't get to remember any of this, which is why it was so weird when Ahsoka's like, oh, she saved my life. I'm like, how do you know that? Now, you mentioned there's a huge time bubble between these two spaces.
There's a large stretch of time between when Ahsoka walked away from the Jedi Order and when we see her as Fulcrum at the beginning of Rebels. There's a good stretch of time. Literally any number of things could have happened to her between then and then to reacquaint her with the owl.
But her line, I couldn't save my master, makes me think that either she remembered, was re-given this thing, the bird, which you mentioned is like her avatar.
I think she was literally just talking about 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, like, she knew who Vader was. She knew who Vader was and was like, well, I was kind of there for a lot of the awful things that happened. And yeah, no, I don't think pulling him out of time would help.
So yeah, let's talk about why we decided to go to the Jedi Temple in the first place. Everybody is still reeling from the loss of Kanan, and in a lot of ways, these two episodes are these characters bidding him a final farewell.
It's true.
And in order to do that, to learn this final lesson, Kanan left them basically the tablet saying, "Go to the Jedi Temple." And so,
play rock, paper, scissors.
Rochambeau, and you will learn the secrets of the Force. But I really liked there were a lot of really good character bits throughout this episode as Ezra is going on this time and space journey. Zeb in particular has been a wonderful source of comic relief. Much needed comic relief.
Oh, we've absolutely needed that. Just, it talks with its eyes.
If this is what you guys were doing on your Jedi missions, count me out. Not interested.
Like, that's a whole lot of no.
I like that his super cat side came out as well. And he's like, dogs? I don't know.
I don't know about this, guys. I
like speeders.
Are they faster than speeders? Otherwise, we have a bunch of those. I don't know why we're using the wolves.
They can do this weird through the center of the planet time travel thing. Like, let's take the wolves, and then they have no ride home.
Oh, no, they don't.
They just leave at the side of the temple like, all right, that is a long
walk. They should have packed some.
Do you just start, like, walking down the road speeder and, like, stick your thumb out waiting for the next Lothwolf to come
Does
by?
The Hulk theme song play as you...
Yes. That is forever what I want you guys to picture when you think of Hera walking away from the wreckage of the Jedi Temple.
Oh, for like the walking all over the planet, I was thinking do 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 do
da 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 da.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, it is fantasy in space, so that's very fitting. We do have a character that fell to the dark side. So yeah, let's, and I want to talk about Hera for a little bit. There wasn't a ton with her and Zeb in this episode, but I feel like the bits we got with her, again, were very meaningful and unfair.
Cool.
They were necessary to her processing her grief.
When Katie comes back and it's just like, trust your feelings. Let me just rub on your cheek. I'm like, no, we were so close to your love. We were right there.
And then her hand goes right through his.
Yeah. She's just rubbing her own shoulder. Like, there, self. It's going to be now, okay.
When he appeared next to her and put his hand on her shoulder, it was a beautifully tender moment. But I'm sitting here yelling, Kanan, if you would only finish Jedi school, you could have learned how to become a Jedi ghost. And then this wouldn't be a problem.
And then they could make pottery together.
You wouldn't have to outsource your communications through a wolf. You could just be like, hey, everybody, I'm a ghost now. Don't worry, we're still going to get the Empire.
This is my spirit animal. He's talking for me now.
Oh, but it was, again, it was brief, but it was beautiful. And I feel like it put her in just the right place to where we're going to be at the start of next week when we just hit endgame at full speed.
I kind of liked that Kanan did not become a Force ghost in the same way. Minor spoilers if you haven't seen episode 8 yet. But in the same way we don't get Luke, like, instantly popping back. Like, it's totally fine. Like, death is something we have to deal with. And I like the idea that, like, part of Ezra's mission in life is, like, you have to move on from this. What is that
Wasn't
face?
There an episode in Clone Wars that established that you have to do this whole other crazy side quest in order to be a Force ghost?
You have to unlock it. It's an achievement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kanan wouldn't have done it, obviously. Yeah. And Luke probably wouldn't even know about it. So.
Oh, I mean, he's met his fair share of Jedi ghosts.
Also, he's been doing nothing but hanging out.
Yoda didn't give him a tour.
Nobody's got all the books, Katie.
And no one to talk to. He's just out there milking giant beasts like... I'm sure he was like, you know what, that's just fun. Let's just see if I can become a Force ghost.
The reason I started smiling was because I really loved the image of, again, spoiler alert, we should probably say, yeah, we're spoiling all of the movies. But if at the end of episode 8, I'm just picturing Jedi Force ghost Luke incessantly annoying his nephew.
Oh my god, yes.
Hey,
you shouldn't do that. You still shouldn't do that. Why are you doing this? You know this is the wrong decision. I'm very disappointed in you.
Uncle Luke
my
here.
My father would be very disappointed in you.
Uncle Luke here. I just wanted to, you know, hang out and tell you how I really feel about everything. Why all the black? Aren't you warm?
You need a haircut, son.
I know cosplayers who have made Kylo Ren outfits. So much quilting.
It's a lot.
He takes a lot of pride in his appearance. Anyway, so when we get to the Jedi Temple, we actually meet a new character that has not existed in Rebels yet. His name is Hayden, and he's played by Malcolm McDowell.
That's so awesome. You called it immediately. You're like... Is that Malcolm?
Literally. I was listening to the voice and he gave about two lines and I was like, McDowell! For those of you who don't know, he's a pretty well-known character actor. Most well-known for his role as Alex in A Clockwork Orange. And ever since then, he's been very much typecasted as villains.
But hello, Tank Girl.
And Tank Girl. Wow. But he's just one of those actors where I could listen to him read the phone book and that, and I would be entertained.
There's good pipes.
There's a commercial with him and James Earl Jones literally saying the most inane, innocuous things to each other, wasting everyone's time, and yet because it's them,
it's the best.
Fantastic. It
all
is
you need is Morgan Freeman narrating.
Mm. Pretty much.
Angela Lansbury just giving in details, just side commentating.
Ah, fantastic. We need to make this happen.
Julie Andrews.
I love it. I love it. So proper.
So
I need this.
What did you guys think about this guy? Because, and like I said, I was very distracted by the fact that he was Malcolm McDowell. And by distracted, I mean I loved it. What did you guys think of this guy? Because he's basically like the Emperor's kind of art historian.
I liked him a lot. It's cool to see like foot soldiers be like, you know, oh no, I just really enjoy my job. Like my strength is from him.
And I've got I'm very comfortable. I've got a great 401k. Mm-hmm, yeah. I get to do what I love. Like
it really was a great exchange. Like you're just a pawn. Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
Just you couldn't shake him.
He and was you're not.
Yeah, and I like the idea of a person who, like, he was like, I'm really just trying to have a conversation about art with you. You're smart, I'm smart, we could probably figure this out together. I don't know who's going to win at the end, but we both need this information.
Yeah.
Like, how cool is a level-headed villain like that? Like, I really enjoyed watching him. I could use more of him.
I appreciate both that he and Thrawn appreciate how intelligent and how talented Sabine is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it was her intelligence that created this amazing super weapon, and as an artist she's second to almost none. And so it is really interesting whenever she has a sit down one-on-one with one of these villains, they're not talking down to her like she's some damsel in distress. They're like, hey, very intelligent, very talented, artistic person. Let's have a chat, one professional to another.
Well, and it's the villains who take their opponents seriously are the ones that are able to almost defeat them or straight up defeat them. Like, if you throw stormtroopers or just whatever at them, like, oh, they're just rebels, whatever, that's when they get wrecked. But then you have people like Thrawn who study them and who understand that they are intelligent people and an intelligent force and treats them as such. And that's why he's got such a high level of success against them.
Here's a question. Was that guy force sensitive? And if not, how the hell was he planning to open the portal?
That's no, a great and gigantic Kanye shrug.
I don't know. I kind of feel like Palpatine just sort of sends people out on missions they can't complete as like a goof.
It explains a lot. That's a nice cover-all for all the times where you're like, what are you doing, Palpatine? How is that going to help?
Thought it would be funny.
I thought you would enjoy this. You wanted a vacation, and there is art here.
Well, we talked last week about possible clairvoyance, sort of on the Jedi side of things, when it came to their own mortality. Like, not necessarily all the time, because obviously some Jedi are caught off guard when they are murdered. But a lot of the episode was built up to Kanan's demise, and he was basically effectively able to say goodbye to everybody in his own way. And you could tell that he kind of knew something was up. So there is that possible clairvoyance in terms of like, oh, okay, my time is up. It could be that Palpatine, also who is very tied to the Force, just on the dark side of things, knew that there was going to be some permeation at this nexus of time and space. And so he's like, I don't know how it's going to happen. I just have to send people there to go and look at it, and the Force will correct itself in some way, shape, or form, and we're going to be there when it happens.
I wonder if the art historian, whose name escapes me right
Hayden.
Now. Hayden, thank you. Notes. I should just look at them.
To be fair, I don't expect you to be able to make any sense of my chicken scratch.
And I don't know where on the notes, Hayden equals Malcolm McDowell. All right, I gotcha.
With a question mark, exclamation point.
I feel like Palpatine might have actually shown up himself had Hayden figured out how to actually open the portal. Had he had the time to decipher all the art and to come up with the solution. Like, I've got everything in place. Now all we need is for someone force sensitive to open it. Good. I'm taking the 5 o'clock. I'll be there soon.
I will grab a random inquisitor to help me.
Not technically my apprentice, but it doesn't matter.
Close enough. I guess you really don't need a master and an apprentice since Ezra was able to get in just fine.
You just need art. That was really interesting
to me. The idea of, because when you think master and apprentice, you think balance. That's why there must always be two, the rules. Which again, just, is this episode is just breaking all of the rules. They're like, nope, don't need it. Like, you know, is he finding balance? Is he the one? Is he our replacement for Luke? Will he go back to this place and rule? I have a lot of questions. Because you think that space needs a ruler, right? Like, it's sunk into the bottom of the earth. It's gone now. So maybe not so much. But there's got to still be a portal, some way to enter the force in that space where it's tangible. And I feel like it needs a ruler or someone watching out for it. And I'm about it for Ezra. If that's Ezra's like whole thing, I'm here for it.
Well, at this point, how many people even know that that's there anymore? Mm-hmm. The Emperor, Ahsoka, Ezra. We know one of them lasts for a couple of movies and then kind of...
Everybody else is a giant question mark at this point.
Yep.
And given that next week we're getting the last 3 episodes of the series... So any one of them could go.
My point is that space may not need a guardian so much as it just needs the 2 people who know about it not to pass the information on.
But the Force has a funky way of calling 2 people and things.
Well, then the Force can make that decision.
The Force does not have... Like, the Force is just like, I'm just here, like, reaching out to whoever comes. Like, it's totally fine. Now, the Force is gray.
So let's address this for about 2 minutes because the chat for the past... 40 minutes or so since we started has been having a very long debate about balance and the Force.
Whether or not
it being all light is balance, or whether or not having some dark in there
all
is
light
balance.
Literally cannot be balance. Like, I'm sorry, but it cannot.
Technically.
The prophecy that we had in the movies was made by a sentient being. It didn't spring forth fully formed from the Force itself, and... Yeah, we kind of did bring balance to the Force because we definitely cut down the number of Jedi to match the number of Sith.
Technically, you take a piece of paper and you draw a line down the middle. Both sides are white. Technically, yes, there is balance there because they're equal. But that's not the same as the yin-yang balance that the Force always seems to have. Light and dark, and we talked about this a lot when we bring up gray Jedi, when we bring up beings like
Bendu,
Tom Baker.
I'm definitely on board with the line of thinking that says that when the Jedi thinking that all light is balance is a fallacy, and I kind of have to lean on Luke's kind of wording and go, that's probably vanity too, speaking a little bit. I'm definitely more in line with the light and dark and all the gray in between.
And especially if you're looking at them at the father, the daughter, and the son, like, spell that out in a very clear way. And this episode seems to suggest that that is the core, like, initiation of the Jedi. And so I think that if you don't, not only do you need Jedi, not only do you need Sith, but you also need... those grays. You need those middle people to sustain the balance.
The Force is like duct tape. It's got a light side and a dark side, and it binds the universe together.
And it's anyway, gray!
I felt the need to address that, because that has been going on since before the beginning of the episode.
If you guys agree, or if you guys feel differently, let us know in the comments below. Are you guys yay Jedi equals balance, or light and dark equals balance? Let us know. We want to hear your guys' take on it. I kind of love, again, not to like keep going back to the Trinity that we get, but I also really just like narratively speaking where this comes in, because we're coming in right before the end. And what does every good story have? A beginning, a middle, and an end.
And we get to revisit all of it in the voiceovers throughout. And not just the beginning, middle, end of the Rebel story, but of, like, all of Star Wars. It was so much Star Wars, like, fan service of, like, here. Even to the point where we were trying to guess, like, who's doing the voices for what.
I ain't even mad.
How could like, you? Yeah, we have the lines from older Obi-Wan, and I'm sitting there going, so, James Arnold Taylor or Alec Guinness? And you went, oh, it's Alec Guinness. You can tell from the audio quality. And it's like, yes!
Smart jerk over here.
You are absolutely right! It was a guess, guys. I don't know. Could be Steven Stanton. We don't know.
We do not know. We didn't have time to check, but it was cool to hear everybody, and you once again get this sense of, like, Master Apprentice, which is why this might be getting a little bit into prediction territory, but, like, him ripping out Ahsoka, the fact that he led him to free Ahsoka, the fact that we now know Ahsoka probably died. Like, if you think about a time loop and how, you know what I mean, like, time travel is nutty, so you can either believe that time is consistent and Ezra always came back so she never died, or you can believe that he interrupted the moment of her death.
Now,
there are universes, if you do multiverse theory, where she is super dead.
Yeah, definitely.
Here's my main question, because we do get this moment and we get to see the bits of the fight that we didn't get to see before, which, again, that, for any of you guys looking at Katie's Instagram, she captured that moment for us very, very effectively.
She did.
It was like, I have to commit this to film. Like, we have to see this. The world needs to know.
So he does pull her out of the temple where we last saw her. But if you remember, also going back to the end of season 2, there was that scene that we cut back to at the end of this episode where she's walking away with the owl behind her, and it's left ambiguous. We're like, well, is she about to, like, keel over and die? Mm-hmm. We don't know. Here's my question. Yeah. Is time in the Star Wars universe, is it fixed in that he would have always gone back to save her? Or is it a little bit more malleable? Because Palpatine seems to think that you can manipulate it. Otherwise, this place in general would not be important to him at all.
Well, we got to think about the quote the son was saying as he was going down. And again, if you go back to the original trilogy. Down. Ha! But he says, he's like, what is it? All things are changeable by, like, the nature.
The future, by its very nature, is malleable.
Well, and it's also, even if time is fixed, leave it to a Sith to go, oh, you're telling me I can't change that? Let me bring someone back from the dead. I got this.
I can do whatever I want.
Hold my beer.
Hold my force lightning. You can't hold that. You're dead now.
What's cool is that the Emperor couldn't get into this space, which I think says a lot of either needing to be on holy ground, per se, or if it's more of, like, he wasn't allowed entry.
Because of the type of energy from the Force that he uses.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question. After Ezra, after seeing the moment of Kaden's demise, realizes that it was not right for him to interfere in this moment, and that was the lesson he needed to learn in order to move on, Ahsoka tells him, I can't go back with you. Now, why is that? Does she know something we don't?
Probably that being exempt from the time stream for a couple years is liable to screw some things up. Like, she needs to be put back where she was.
Yes, that's true, because Ezra did look much older than the last time she saw him.
Yeah.
This is also a throwback to Ahsoka leaving on Clone Wars. I don't know if you ever saw her final episode there. Where they put it through the trial. They're like, look, you're suspended or fired or whatever. And she's like, you know what? I actually quit. I don't want anything to do with you guys and your BS. I'm done. You're all nuts. So long. And she walks out to the desert alone. And I feel like this is part of a thing that we keep coming back to for Ahsoka, which is she is the perfect Jedi born in a time of no Jedi. You know what I mean? And so she goes her lone samurai way and has to figure things out for herself. And I think it's a combination of what Katie was saying, of like, look, if I just drop out of the time stream, that's weird. And also, now I have 3 years to figure out how to help you.
This is true. I got some work to do.
Right, I have time to strengthen, to learn, to develop. and then I'll come find you, knowing that you're going to make it to at least this point.
I love that it was find me and not I'm on LaFall.
That's
bless
true.
You. Bless you. I realize you've got this nice little force connection, but holy cow, a map would not be amiss.
Oh, by the way, the planet is also under blockade, so you're going to have a hard time. Get in there before the blockade. You know what? You'll figure it out.
They didn't have time for all of that, but I'm on Lothal. They've got time enough for that while they're yelling, running down their separate paths and yelling at each other. Like, come on, guys.
So, let's talk about Palpatine a little bit. For one, it is a joy whenever I get to hear Ian McDiarmid's reprising this role. It is an absolute delight. And, you know, say what you will about the prequels, one of the highlights that people always come back to is that he always looked like he was giving it 110% and having a blast.
Oh, yeah.
And I absolutely hope that's the case, because whenever he plays Palpatine, it is just a delight.
Yeah, seeing Palpatine show up, you're like, oh, it's getting serious. Like, we are, what's cool about this era of Star Wars is they're like, oh, you didn't like the prequels? Dope. Okay. What about everything leading up to, like, right up to the moment? Like, we should have gone a little further and just led you right into A New Hope. And I like that we keep coming back to that, that we keep getting led up right into moments where we know what's going to happen, but it's still a nail-biter. It's still, like, a thrilling moment.
Yeah. What about the 2 decades in between all of these things? That it's a little bit of doomed prequelitis, but I don't mind, because prequels can be a good ride. We had that with Crisis Core. We had that with Birth by Sleep. We had that with Halo Reach. All of these hurt me. And so that's kind of where I'm expecting this to go, because it's called doomed prequelitis for a reason.
Well, we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get into predictions, but the title of the next episode is A Fool's Hope. So yeah, if that's not the prelude to a consistent heart stab, I don't know what is. But yeah, we get Palpatine in this. It seems he has his own sort of gateway into this realm that he doesn't necessarily have access to. You made the point, Joel, of it looks like he's trying to establish a force connection with Ezra in this moment.
Especially when he gets the loop around his foot, and it's like, because I was confused as to why he wasn't just stepping through the portal.
Why didn't he just jump in? But it looks like he could only put his hand through once he actually had a hold of Ezra. Yeah.
So he just had a Poltergeist TV screen going on there. A
little bit, yeah.
Totally.
I don't know why you send them as far away as you can with fire first. No. You force pull them closer to you. You don't throw fire at them.
Maybe he could only envelop them. But fire is a magical property. We talked a little bit how this reminding us of the sisters a little bit. And so perhaps, you know, if they're burning with your fire, that's a strong ass connection. You just jump straight through.
That's true. And we see him do something which we don't normally see Jedi casting magical spells. Like, they're not, you know, we always say that this is space fantasy in space, but we hardly ever see anybody actually, you know, bubble toil and trouble.
He's speaking
magic.
Alien languages and stuff. Like, he was really casting.
Yeah,
in this.
The only people I can think of who do that are the Night Sisters, and so it was like, okay, what sort of alien magic is Palpatine tapping into to light this realm on fire?
Oh, right. We are in the full-on dark side. Sometimes you forget.
I feel like they wouldn't have just brought him in for this episode or these 2 episodes if he wasn't going to play a part in the finale.
Oh, yeah.
You think? I don't know if it's necessary beyond this point. Like, we know that he was actively getting something. We've seen him brush up against them. We know where he's going to be after this. I wouldn't be opposed to having him in there, but I just feel like the final dogfight is so aligned now. Like, Ezra's got his mission. He knows what to do. I'll save that for predictions.
And also Thrawn.
Yeah, and that.
We have to resolve Thrawn, who at this point is just mad as hell and not going to take it anymore.
Ugh. Gosh, yeah, not even like, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed, I'm
it's
mad.
It's like, oh no, I'm mad.
I'm furious, I am livid.
It's true.
He is boiling, and it's going to be very interesting to see how Governor Price deals with all that when he finally gets to Lothal. What are the odds, and maybe this is predictions, but what are the odds that, like, he just kills her on the spot?
Pretty high.
I doubt on the spot he might make an example of her.
Yeah, I don't see him landing in and being, like, one to the head. All right, next, what are we doing here? But I definitely see her, she has to go. Like, you messed up so bad. There is nothing you can do to justify any of what happened. And knowing him, he's a Law and Order kind of guy.
The question is not if. The questions are when and how.
Yes.
But, no. Bye, Mary. Sorry.
Aww.
Bye.
Aww. I won't miss her.
I mean, she was a great character. She's a fun villain. Past tense, we're all like, yeah, it was.
Ooh, we have a comment in the hashtag, Palpatine was using Sith alchemy.
Oh, I have not read up on my Sith alchemy, but that sounds exciting.
That sounds awesome. I want to. that sounds like, oh man, because I'm getting like Full Metal Alchemist vibes now. I'll create the Philosopher's Stone.
I mean, he is kind of a
it's made of people.
That's Alphonse.
Vader's kind of an Alphonse if you think about it. Little lost boy trapped in a giant like metal thing. I buy it. I'd destroy you, Katie. I'm so sorry.
I'm just imagining Darth Vader keeping a kitten in his chest plate.
I also just can't, like,
that's
I'm imagining...
That's what he's doing in the chair. Vader, shh, get back in there.
I'm imagining...
Yes, Fluffy, together we will rule the world.
I'm imagining the Alphonse voice coming out of Darth Vader.
Oh, so
and
cute.
Imagine the Darth Vader voice coming out of Alphonse.
Okay. Hilarious.
Don't need either one of them.
I think we need both of them.
Yes.
So the only other real thing I wanna kind of touch on in this episode is that I'm a little disappointed that Hayden as a character came and went. He was here. He had a lot of personality and he had a lot of really great interactions with Sabine, but then. We get to the end of the episode and he just falls to his death and that seems to be the end of
it. He does have that perfect Star Wars death, though, of like, you kind of saw it, but you didn't really see it. And so, like, maybe he comes back and, like, half of him is burned.
Kid-friendly sort of death.
He served his purpose narratively and then he was eaten alive by the art he loved so much.
Now,
ta-da, winner.
Quick question. Would we have gotten more of him... had we not been in a race to the finish to get to the end?
Probably not. I mean, I think he served his purpose narratively. We would have gotten as much of him as... We only would have had him in the time that we spent at the temple. And I feel like two episodes was pretty good to encapsulate all this. I feel like if they'd stretched it out to a third, it would have killed the pacing. So I do think we only ever would have had him as long as we had this particular arc at the temple. So, no, I don't see him coming back.
I feel like they needed somebody very much like Thrawn, but to be kind of expendable. Because I feel like a lot of his lines could have been given to Thrawn. He was just Thrawn very much toned down and a little bit more like middle management.
Middle management Thrawn.
Yeah,
I love it.
I'm just happy to come into work every day. I love what I do.
You're a peon.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. I do not aspire to hire.
But yeah, I feel like they needed somebody who was like Thrawn, but was also expendable.
He worked. Yeah. I feel like you'd have, like, if we had been introduced to him earlier in this series, it would have been interesting to see, like, essentially a middle management Tomb Raider. Like, someone going around, like, trying to solve Jedi puzzles, and then maybe, like, Ezra and Kanan are, like, trying to beat him
at
his own game.
I would
watch a middle management Tomb Raider.
I would watch the heck out of Star Wars Tomb Raider. Oh, my gosh. That would
Temple
be the best.
Raider.
Definitely.
Yeah, Star Wars Indiana Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Give it
to
me.
It belongs in a museum. It belongs with the Jedi.
It belongs with the Empire. Wait, are you a bad guy or a lovable rogue? I don't really know.
Does it matter?
Either way, they're making an unnecessary movie with my backstory. Lando, the movie featuring Han Solo.
Do we have any final thoughts on these two episodes before we move on over into prediction territory?
Just generalized dying whale noises. And really, the art style in this was amazing.
Fantastic visuals. And also, it was really, like, even though we, you know, it's been a couple episodes since Kanan died, it was a really beautiful way to say goodbye. And
definitely. There's also, as what you pointed out, which was the score, was so different than, I think, the typical Star Wars score we're used to hearing. It's a little bit lighter and kind of twinkly almost.
The points where they used the original Star Wars theme were used extremely effectively.
Oh, yeah.
But then at the very end, when they were closing the temple, oddly enough, it had more of like a synth sound to it.
A little bit.
And like I don't want to compare everything kind of synthy to like Tron Legacy and Tron Uprising, but to me it was like I'm hearing a little bit of synth, which to me I'm like, that's different than your normal orchestral choices for Star Wars. And I'm wondering if that's, again, because we're saying goodbye to one thing and it's the start of something new. So you've got a little bit of old and a little bit of new in there.
I definitely love that vibe.
Maybe if anybody who happens to work on Star Wars Rebels can enlighten us if that's what you guys are going for, please let us know. Okay, any final thoughts? All right,
nope,
let's go ahead and move on into predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
So we've got three episodes left. Ahsoka's alive. Palpatine is kind of potentially gunning for Ezra. And also Thrawn is coming back to Lothal. And he is mad.
This is a sad predictions. I'm not going to lie. It just, I don't think Ezra makes it out.
Because
we get such a pointed line of like one last lesson. And the lesson was find where you can be useful. And sacrifice yourself for the greater good, essentially. And I feel like he's going to follow his master to a T. They're going to disrupt. If the parade does go on, you know, like they were talking about last week, I feel like that's where they make their strike. But I definitely think Ezra goes down, but I'm hoping that Ahsoka gets out. I just need Ahsoka to live. She's my favorite. We have books on Ahsoka. I'm not 100% sure of where that lands on the timeline for where we are now between Rogue One.
Same with, like, we had somebody point out last week that we know for a fact Hera, at least, at the very least, makes it to Return of the Jedi because of the Forces of Destiny short. And we know that there was an Ahsoka Forces of Destiny short that I don't know where it took place in the timeline either because I haven't watched it yet. So, yeah, it's hard to say. I hope she lives, too. Katie, thoughts?
I've never been attached to her. Everyone's like, oh my god, Ahsoka, she's the best. I hope she lives. And I'm like, well, she's here.
I just meant prediction-wise. I didn't mean to, like, call you out on your Ahsoka indifference. I was just thinking,
hashtag
what do you
Ahsoka
think,
indifference.
What do you think is going to happen?
I also think that Ezra is probably not going to make it out of here. Like, I don't think we can make it through this finale with everyone else intact. There's just too much going on. It is literal endgame here. And Lothal is his planet.
I think, weirdly enough, the most important person's live or death is going to be Sabine's. She could potentially rule a planet. Like, and a badass planet. And so I'm very interested to see, like, is she going to bring the Mandalorians in to fight this final battle? She's made good with them, so it's definitely a possibility.
But she abdicated.
That is also true.
And handed it off
for now. We've seen when ladies abdicate on this thing, and then the planet's like, but we need you.
Come back. Please come
please
back.
Please be our ruler. We know you had that whole fight with your sister, but screw it.
Here's the thing. We spent basically the entire series setting up various pieces to potentially come back into play. I feel like Mandalore is an excellent example of that, along with other people on Lothal who have been helped.
Vader.
I think that when things start to go down on Lothal, whether or not Mon Mothma wants to send reinforcements, because she probably doesn't, I feel like it's going to be a Rogue One sort of scenario where people just decide to go anyway because they're like, hey, the ghost crew helped us in our hour of need. It's our turn to help them.
In that line of thinking, does Hondo show up?
that would be hilarious.
I really want.
I don't know. I don't know why he would.
I feel like Hondo could easily be tricked into thinking there was some like stuff here. They'll be like, "Look, if you help us, you could take whatever you want from the Empire. We don't care."
Does he owe Ezra one?
I think he might be a fun cameo, but the problem with Hondo is that when he's in an episode, the episode is about Hondo. And we can't afford to do
Look at my shenanigans. I'm a lovable pirate.
I love that, like, no one in chat has predictions for Zeb. Like, they had to be prompted.
Here's the thing.
He could go either way. We don't know.
Here's the thing. I think Zeb lives and Callus doesn't.
I haven't seen Callus in a dog's age.
I came back to die.
That would make sense. That's a very Callus thing to do. Just, hey, I'm here to help. I'm good now, Death.
He's been Space Javert since the start of the show, guys. I know he's going to die.
I feel the same way about Zeb.
Himself off a bridge.
Because Zeb is a charge into fight situations first. And as long as the crew's, like, together, they're pretty good at keeping each other in balance. But if they get dispersed, I don't know how long Zeb's able to live. Especially with Thrawn. Like,
but there's a whole planet full of his people.
That is also true.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get Rex back because he's also been kind of MIA for a good chunk of this season. I feel like he and Callus are going to come back. Now, does Rex live? That's a good question.
Rex and his bros.
Well, we haven't really seen his bros around since they were introduced.
That's true.
Going based off of the samurai themes we've been having throughout the entire series, really, Rex is looking for a nice final battle. Like, he wants to die on the battlefield. You definitely get that vibe from Rex. So
probably, yeah.
And I don't, as long as it's a good, honorable fight, I don't mind Rex passing here. Like, he's lived a long time. He struggled. He's seen way too much. Like, poor season 6 of Clone Wars, if you haven't got a chance, like, shows you what Rex has been through. And that stuff is, it is hard. So I wouldn't be surprised if he went to. If they pull a Rogue One and just kill, like, 98% of people, I wouldn't be shocked, and I wouldn't be upset about it.
Yeah, I would be a little upset, but, like, only in that, like, meaningful story sort of way.
Yes.
Okay, guys, I feel like that just about wraps it up. Nice. Katie Cullen, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. We have the Ruby After Show on Wednesdays at 7 p.m., it's Rooster Teeth Reviews right now. I'm good at this, you guys. Voltron is also starting up again next week, so that's going to be super fun. It'll be the show right before this one.
I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique every week at blackgirlnerds.com. If you're into weird sci-fi things that sometimes make sense and sometimes don't, check out Atlanta. Yeah, it goes there. It's strange and it's fun. We'll be recapping it Thursdays, I think, at 9. You can always check that schedule. Also doing Black Lightning, which is super fun. That's Wednesdays at 6, so join us.
And I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. Guys, we are going to be covering all three parts next week of the finale. And trust me when I say it's going to be a party. And you're going to see some familiar faces. And it's going to be a good time. So stay tuned and join the party. Thank you to everybody who used the hashtag. Thank you to everybody in the live chat. Thank you. Again, don't forget to comment on iTunes for your shout out next week. Thank you all so, so much for watching. And we will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
May the Force be with you always.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.